You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Aloha, audiophiles, astutely ascertaining accents and accessories about atlases. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 220, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your bodacious bunch of boisterous baby bringers.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
I can do a good impression of my baby. She says,
"Oh yeah?
Now, 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 now."
Our daughter is just about to be two, and so she'll be like, "No!" And then if I'm like, "Really?" Then she'll get down on all fours and be like, "No!" Oh, God. Okay.
How do they know? How do they know that "no" is like has such power?
Because you stop what you're doing.
And today we have a very special guest joining us for Pop Quiz Hot Shot. Colin, do you want to say some words about our special guest? Tease it out.
I'd be delighted to say some words. Yeah, so as you all know, regular listeners, I live in lovely Berkeley, California. And one of the things I used to love to do, especially pre-pandemic, was I like to get out and walk up and down Telegraph Avenue. One of the things that was going on Telegraph is there's always a lot of construction and building. And I noticed that a couple of the businesses along Telegraph, when they were undergoing remodeling or, you know, changing into a new business, they would, instead of just putting up regular old boring plywood covers on the outside, as you might see in a big city, they would put up the covers and there would be a really cool art piece on it, a mural. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is really neat. And I noticed another one a couple blocks away. I got up close and I'm like, huh, okay, the artist has their signature here. And I went and I looked up the artist online. I found out it was an artist named Nigel Sussman, saw that he was local. And then about a year or so ago, I moved into a new house, still in Berkeley. And the house that I'm in now, when you come up off the freeway, you come along Gilman, right by the punk club, of course, yep. But I'm getting sidetracked. So as you're coming up off the freeway toward 924 Gilman, you pass another mural. It says, "Welcome to West Berkeley." And I was like, that's another Nigel Sussman. I had gotten to the point that I could recognize the artwork just based on the visuals. Purely by happenstance, I was clicking through Twitter at one point, a few months ago, and I noticed that Nigel Sussman followed Good Job Brain on Twitter. And I said, "You guys," I was like kind of fanboying out here a minute. I was like, "You guys, do you know who Nigel Sussman is?" And then I, shared a link, and I was, and of course,
everybody's
the crew,
like,
"Oh yes, I've seen those." Yeah. I mean, we all live in the Bay Area. I said, "I wonder if we could approach this cool artist and ask if maybe he'd like to collaborate with us in some way, shape, or form."
And I said, "He's too cool for us. We're not cool enough." But yes, we have the one and only Nigel Sussman here in the virtual studio today. Welcome, Nigel. Hello.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. This is exciting. Stoked to be contacted by you because I've fanboying a little bit too. I've been listening to Good Job Brain for years.
Wow.
And so I knew exactly what I was getting myself into when you contacted me. I love being associated with stuff that I like. Thanks for the great intro, Colin.
Oh, woo! He has done something very special for us. He has made an original Good Job Brain illustration for us, for you, the listeners, and it is a real ode to some of the things that we love on Good Job Brain, primarily food. Nigel made a super cool illustration of almost like all of the interesting food bits that we've talked about for the last 10 years.
It's so cool, you guys.
I'm so glad you like it. Food is a big part of my work. You've got to be crazy if you're not into some kind of food. So it's a way that we all connect. So to make something that references all of the food stuff that Good Job Brain has been obsessed with over the years. And it's like weird and quirky things, which kind of tells a story.
Nigel, how would you describe this piece that you've made?
It's a big brain made out of foods that has all of these references to the food. And I've labeled them so that it makes it sort of scientific and instructional. The blend of irreverent and educational.
Irreverent is the
100% on brand. Yeah, I like it because it's so dense.
Yeah, it has a great what I like is a Where's Waldo effect.
The 20-year-old stick of gum is now immortalized forever.
Like, it makes my taste buds fire. You know what I mean? Like the power of suggestion.
Yeah.
Little Pavlov.
And Nigel's fantastic illustration is available in our new merch store.
Woo!
We now have a shop on Redbubble where you can get some Good Job Brain stuff. You can get Nigel's brain food illustration printed on a shirt, on a poster, and on my favorite, on an apron. We also have our classic logo available on shirts too, of any color of your choosing. We have mustache face masks for all ages. And a poster commemorating our favorite noted normal person, Thomas Edison, that lists out all 146 of his insane job application trivia questions, which was hilariously featured in a past segment. So head on over to redbubble.com/people/goodjobbrain/explore, or it's just going to be hot linked from our website, goodjobbrain.com. Well, Nigel, you're going to join us for our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hotshot. How this is going to work, because Nigel doesn't have a buzzer.
He's going to meow.
Cats show up in my work for one reason or another, so I feel like that's fitting.
Perfect. Yeah.
Here we go, everybody. I have a random Trivial Pursuit card. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. Nigel has his meow mouth, and let's answer some questions. First question, Blue Edge for geography. In 1814, Napoleon Bonaparte was exiled to what island in the Mediterranean?
Island.
Multiple
choice. Come on. All right.
Okay.
No, please. Please, give us the choice.
Three choices, Corsica, Elba, or Malta.
I was calling.
Calling.
It is Elba.
Elba, pink wedge for pop culture. We're going to go around the room for this one.
Okay.
The question is, what are the stage names of the five Spice Girls?
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to call on you and tell me. Bonus point if you know their real name as well.
All right.
Wow. Nigel, guest of honor, you can go first.
This is not my forte right here in this... Posh Spice and Scary Spice. And is Ginger.
He can do all of them.
He can do all of them.
I don't know the real, I definitely don't know real names. I'm not even going to try. Is Sporty one?
Mm. I said, ding, 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 ding.
I'm going to need a tag team here.
Old Spice.
Old Spice, yes. Old Bay seasoning.
All right, Dana, lay it on us. All five and their real names. Can you do it?
Okay, so Posh Spice is Victoria Beckham.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You said Sporty Spice. That's Mel B? No, Mel C.
C.
Mel C. Mm-hmm. Scary is Mel B.
Correct.
Then there's Baby Spice, who's Emma Bunsen. Bunton.
Wow.
Bunton, yes. And then Ginger is Jerry Halliwell.
Correct. Wow.
Oh, Ginger Spice is one.
I knew more of those than I thought I might.
I forgot the baby one.
All you forgot was baby. You put Baby Spice in the corner.
Next question, Yellow Wedge. True or false? Give me thumbs up for true, thumbs down for false. The first apple pie was made by American colonists in Boston. True or false?
The first apple pie?
First apple pie was made by American colonists in Boston.
True, I refuse to believe nobody ever thought of this before them.
Yeah,
definitely. I know. I think
it is. You are correct. It is false. It says the first recorded recipe is from 14th century England.
Yeah, I mean, duh. Yeah, come on.
Purple Wedge. This is what a weird card today. All right. Purple Wedge. With what color is the boy's name Rufus commonly associated?
What? Okay, all right.
Does it mean something perhaps?
Chris.
Red.
Just a guess.
Seems like it's going that direction. You are correct.
Okay.
The card says specifically brownish red or reddish brown.
the color of a roof.
It just, yeah, it, maybe it's just etymology.
The
like
whole spectrum.
Yeah, it runs the spectrum from reddish brown to brownish
red. I feel like I should have known that.
I guess that was a question for an artist.
Yeah, I've dropped the ball big time on that one. There's no Rufus crayon, I don't think.
Yet.
All right. Green, white for science. What is the name of the rare second full moon in a single month?
Oh.
So, context, every month has a full moon, and every month's full moon has a name. Right, based on farmer's almanac.
It was just this Friday.
It was the beaver moon.
Yeah,
that was seems appropriate.
It does.
Chris, you bust in.
Is this a blue moon? As in
yes,
once in a blue
it is.
Moon?
Yeah,
okay.
Once in a blue moon. All right.
Okay,
didn't want to overthink it.
All right, last question. Orange wedge. Okay, for the sports people. Nigel, how good are you at sports?
Very small sports knowledge, but if it's not baseball, I don't got anything.
That's good, because I'm not super strong in the baseball.
Yeah, well, this is not baseball. Chuck Foreman lost his chance to win the NFC rushing title in 1975 when a Buffalo fan, not a Buffalo, a fan from the city of Buffalo.
Right. Yes, not a Buffalo who was a fan.
Hit him in the eye with what?
Once again.
Okay.
Chuck Foreman lost his chance to win the NFC rushing title in 1975 when a Buffalo fan hit him in the eye with what?
Meow.
Oh. Nigel meowed in.
Oh, I got a joke answer. Is it a chicken wing?
I wish.
Oh my gosh, that's such a good
answer. Makes too much sense.
Yeah.
Knowing Buffalo and Buffalo fans, perhaps, and I'm hoping that it wouldn't be something really gruesome or it wouldn't make it on its way to a card. I'm going to guess a snowball.
Oh my God, you're correct.
Oh.
Wow. Nice.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Impressive.
All right.
I thought it was a hot dog or something like that.
And there have been like instances of like fans, you know, doing, again, I don't endorse this in any way, throwing coins and things on the field.
Oh.
But I don't think they would put that on a card. Like, whereas a snowball seems kind of just on that line where.
But if someone did throw coins or something, like, they would kick you out.
Oh,
if
they
can identify you, absolutely. Yeah, if they can identify you, they will kick you out for sure.
Whoa. Cool. Well, good job, brains. That was our pop quiz. Nigel, did you used to play pub trivia at all?
I've done a couple times. It's a lifestyle.
Oh,
it's really
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That is the best way to describe
it. I mean, I didn't do well with the Spice Girls, but I have a lot of music knowledge and some science stuff.
Music is always valuable on a pub quiz.
Yeah. Music and sports. Mm-hmm. I think between the four of us, like, we span a pretty good decade by decade of music trivia that we kind of cover each other's
That's
gaps
true.
And holes.
Yeah. You know, different pieces.
Nigel, thank you so much for joining us. Anything you would like to share? Your anything you want to plug? Oh, we have a plug theme song. I'll play it here.
Who's got something to plug?
Holidays coming up again, and I still have these alphabet books that I'm trying to to sell. You can order them most easily through my site. Definitely, you can follow me on mostly Instagram at Nigel Sussman.
Nigel, you're working some of the commissions for some of the big names in the Bay Area, and we're so appreciative and thankful that you were able to carve out time to do something for us. We appreciate it. It's so awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was fun.
And I have one Patreon listener fan fact. This one is from Claire Norris, and her fun fact to share is that as the pyramids of Giza were being built, woolly mammoths still lived. They happened at the same time. That's crazy to me. She is a science teacher, and so this is one of the facts that she tells her science class. So as the pyramids were being built, a woolly mammoth still roamed the earth.
That's great.
My window and perception of time comes very cloudy when we talk about prehistoric stuff. That seems to me, you know, really, really shocking.
Didn't we get, I think somebody posted on the Good Job Brain Facebook group that there was a window of time when a samurai could have sent a fax to Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, that's a great example. I was just
thinking
about that. That's right.
Yeah, because like I guess for a certain definition of a facsimile machine.
I looked more into woolly mammoths, and this is something I found. According to the OED, Oxford English Dictionary, Thomas Jefferson, American President Thomas Jefferson, was partially responsible for using the word mammoth to describe big things. Like he was one of the people who started using the term mammoth to talk about something that is very, very, very big. Hmm. And what he was describing that was mammoth was a cheese wheel. Cheshire, which is a city in Massachusetts, they once combined the milk from every cow of the town of Cheshire. Cheshire created this massive cheese wheel and gifted it to Thomas Jefferson.
And we're gonna give him the biggest cheese he's ever seen in his life. He'll never forget us.
He's going to need to coin a new usage to capture.
He's never going
to
poop again.
Okay, on with the show. Today is episode 220, and every fifth episode, we don't have a topic or a theme, and it's just us making our own random quizzes to stump each other and stump you guys, listeners. So today, it's All Quiz Bonanza number 44.
So I have decided that I'm going to bring back an old segment. I did a couple of variations on this. This segment is titled First in Line. First in Line. The Second Coming. This is the sequel to First in Line. And what this is I will give you the first line spoken in a movie, and you will tell me what the movie is. Ooh. Now, something that I learned in researching this quiz is that you really have to be careful and double and triple check this stuff, because there are so many lists online of the best first lines in movies that say things like, they're like, the best first line in a movie is, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster, Goodfellas. And it's like, that's funny, because that is in no way the first line of that movie. That is the last line of the first scene of the movie that like people remember. It's an incredibly memorable line because it smashes after that right to the title of the movie. But it's not the first line of Goodfellas. Is actually, what the F is that? That's the first line of Goodfellas. So there are so many lists where it's like, here's the first line of this movie, and it's a memorable line from the first scene, but it is not the first thing that is uttered. No, in this case, I believe, actually me if you have to, listeners, I'm pretty positive that these are the first lines hear spoken in the film. So here we go.
Okay.
I want you all to write this down, because I just enjoy write down quick. Okay. I'll just keep score for everybody, and we'll see how you all do. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Question one. I was 12 going on 13 the first time I saw a dead human being. I was 12 going on 13 the first time I saw a dead human being.
I believe I just watched this movie, if I'm correct. Oh. And I'm going to feel very silly if I'm wrong.
All right. Answers up. Okay. Everybody says Stand By Me, and everyone is correct. Woo! Congratulations.
Yay.
Yes.
That's by Stephen King, right?
It was, based on the novella called The Body by Stephen King.
Okay. Am I insane, or was there a scene in that movie where like someone puked and then someone saw that person puke and then everybody ended up puking?
It's the story within the story. Yeah, that's right. It's at the pie eating contest, which is one of the stories that one of the boys tells the other boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not crazy. That traumatized me more than the dead body.
All right, here we go. Question number two. If I live to be 100, I'll never be able to forget that big snowstorm a couple of years ago. The weather closed in and, well, you might not believe it, but the world almost missed Christmas. GPT again. If I live to be 100, I'll never be able to forget that big snowstorm a couple of years ago. The weather closed in and, well, you might not believe it, but the world almost missed Christmas.
Oh.
It is a movie. Answers right. up. Karen says, Ice Storm. Colin says, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh.
And Dana says, 2012. 2012 is Dana's answer. Mm. I have stumped you all, for the answer is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Wow.
The claymation one?
That's the one. Well, I think it was puppets, but oh, yes, yeah. You're thinking of the same one. Yes.
So dramatic.
I know.
Yeah, right?
Oh. It's like an apocalyptic.
I gave it a real dramatic reading for you, and then it's coming off of Stand By Me about a dead body, so I think I put it in your head that it's going to be drama.
And then I was but it's a children's thing, yeah, but I just couldn't get there. Yeah.
All right, question number three. We were somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert when the drugs began to take hold. We were somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert when the drugs began to take hold.
Oh, man.
Colin looks confident. Karen and Dana are making faces.
I feel like I know, I have an idea of what movie it is. I can see the poster. Can't read the poster in my mind. I'm trying to see if I can read title of the movie.
Yeah. I'm going to have to ask for answers in a few seconds here. So write down something that you think might get you half a point, the mercy point.
Oh, okay. Are we doing that? All right.
No, we're not.
Oh, sorry.
just for pure entertainment purposes.
I did so well on partial credit in school.
Oh my goodness. Oh no.
Oh, Dana.
I was
poor so thing.
You poor thing. So Dana has written Leaving Las Vegas, which is a movie.
I knew that was wrong.
Whereas Colin and Karen have written Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which is the name of the film, and the Hunter S. Thompson short story on which it is based, which began the same iconic line. I actually found, I've been thinking about this because I was at the flea market maybe a couple of months back and found the issue of Rolling Stone. That short story actually appeared in.
Nice,
yeah,
nice.
I found that issue of Rolling Stone. And I bought it and they sold it for a bunch of money.
Are we sure we're not doing partial credit? Because that I knew that was what I was trying to get to.
But I can't give it to you. You know what? Hold on.
I was like, it's Johnny Depp. The poster's kind of trippy. I was like, what? I can't see the title. What's it say?
Okay.
He's in Las Vegas. Okay.
I'm going to give you a little tiebreaker asterisk. Ooh. Such that if there is a tie at the end of this, I will give you the nudge based on it. But right now, Karen and Colin have 2 points. You have 1 point with a little star.
Okay. All right. Karen, you and I have to start lobbying for additional asterisks here, too.
Question number four. It all began on New Year's Day in my 32nd year of being single. Once again, I found myself on my own and going to my mother's annual turkey curry buffet. This movie inspired me to make turkey curry. Just because they talked about it and ate it. Oh, it was great. It was, it turned out to be the perfect way for me to use all the Thanksgiving leftovers and all the bits.
Yeah.
I just made a giant pot of essentially turkey tikka masala, basically.
Ooh.
And ate it for a week. Yes, it all began on New Year's Day in my 32nd year of being single. Once again, I found myself on my own and going to my mother's annual turkey curry buffet. Answers go up. And... So Karen and Dana have said Bridget Jones' Diary, which is the right answer. And Colin has put Love Actually.
Close.
Now, Chris, I'm going to have to lobby here for a partial point because these movies both take place in England, I believe. So I think that it's fairly obvious that I was in some way thinking of Bridget Jones' Diary. I would just to request some consideration.
First scene of Love Actually is not at a buffet.
At an airport. Hugh Grant is in both of them.
Okay. Well, we'll just you just take it under advisement, Chris. It's just is all I'm saying. You know,
how about half an asterisk?
I'm giving you a half an asterisk. One half an asterisk. So, Colin, if you can earn another half an asterisk, you will tie Dana's asterisk.
Okay. All right.
And we may have to move to something else.
That's what we're doing now.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Question number five. There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. Karen wrote something down confidently and has a big, big old grin on her face right now.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that helps me. The chances of it being something Disney means is now the chances have just gone up. Right. Oh, yeah.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. Probably about a dog.
Yep, Air Bud. So.
It could be the title. It's not. I'm gonna spoil it. It's not the first line of Air Bud.
But it could be.
But it could be. Yeah. Okay, all right, let's have some answers in a couple of seconds, write down something. Colin writes down, a pretty good guess, but I was actually thinking that somebody might guess that. Colin says Pinocchio. Dana has written down Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, but the only person who is correct is indeed Karen, who has correctly nailed it as the opening lines of the first song in Moulin Rouge.
I haven't seen that either.
What?
Nice.
It's great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can I lobby for extra asterisk or parts of an asterisk? Because
No, hang on here.
Moulin Rouge exclamation point.
Exclamation
That's
point.
That's the
that
official
is...
title of the movie.
I'm going to, yes. Yeah, so I'm gonna put an exclamation point next to your points. We may reveal later on what that means. All right.
Good luck cashing that one in, Karen.
Yep. Never know. You never know. It might come into play. Question six. Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport.
Okay.
Whenever Karen's laughing. She might know it. She might not. Who knows? Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. Okay. Karen, everyone has written Love Actually. Yes. Great job.
Okay.
Colin, if I didn't say it happened at airport, would you have gotten it?
No, Karen, no, 100%, I still would have put Love Actually. Heathrow was enough for me to, I was like, oh.
There we go. All right. Three questions left. Karen has 5 points and an exclamation point. Colin has 3 points and half an asterisk, and Dana has 3 points with an asterisk.
Oh.
Okay, here we go.
It might come into play. We'll see.
It might come into play. I believe in America. America has made my fortune, and I raised my daughter in the American fashion. I believe in America. America has made my fortune, and I raised my daughter in the American fashion. We have some answers. Maybe write down something.
All right.
Okay.
You've asked this before.
This is not right.
So Dana says American Beauty. Karen says The Godfather, and Colin has written The Godfather 100%.
So the way you read it, deprived of all context, you're like
an accent. Right, that's what I'm trying to do. Exactly.
It's not a scene reading.
Yeah. I really like that. I really love that intro. I mean, for me, that's really just one of the best introductions. And the best openers in movies. The character's name is Amerigo Buonasera, which means good night, America.
Oh.
That's him basically saying, like, I tried to, you know, follow all the rules in America, but like it didn't work out for me, so. And it sort of gets at the central sort of conflict of the film. All right, just two more. Okay. Everybody gets a point on that one. Excuse me. Karen and Colin get points on that one.
Yeah.
And two more. People do not give it credence that a young girl could leave home and go off in the wintertime to avenge her father's blood, but it did happen. People do not give it credence that a young girl could leave home and go off in the wintertime to avenge her father's blood, but it did happen. This is from a movie. These are all from movies, but this is a little bit of a rewrite of the first line of the book.
Hmm.
There's a hint this movie is based on a book, as so many of them are. So it probably doesn't really narrow it down that much. Have I stumped everybody? Write down something. Fine.
Oh, maybe that's right. I don't know.
All right.
Oh!
Dana has written Hannah. Karen has written Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Colin has written True Grit. And Colin is correct.
It is
True Grit. Specifically, I believe the Coen brothers' recent remake of it, which uses that first line out of the book. Whereas I think the original filmed version did not. We have one final question. Karen has 6. Colin has 5. Dana has 3. One final movie. Here we go.
Okay.
All right, everyone. This is a stick up. Don't anybody move. Now empty that safe.
Oh.
All right, everyone. This is a stick up. Don't anybody move. Now empty that safe.
I feel like now I was just thinking like what movie starts with a stick up.
With
robbery.
A stick up.
Yeah,
with
robbery.
A bank robbery. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel better about my memory of the movie than I do about the title, man.
Me too. Okay, sure. I bet we're on the same wavelength.
All right. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, this movie was huge. Movie.
Yeah. All right.
Massive.
All right. I think it's going to come down to this, Karen.
Okay.
All right. Let's see some answers. All right. Let's find out. Did anybody get it? Colin says The Dark Knight. Karen says The Dark Knight, and Dana says Batman.
We're all.
I get another extra.
The answer is Toy Story. That is the first line of Toy Story, spoken by Andy through Mr. Potato Head.
That's great.
Okay.
That's
yes.
Great.
All right.
Karen did not even need to use her exclamation point that she had.
Oh yeah. You're gonna want to bank that for later.
She's got 6 points and is the big winner, guessing a lot of lines from a lot of very different movies, Karen. So some good performance there for sure.
Oh my gosh. Once Colin was like, I'm not sure about the title, I was like, me neither. Which one is it?
which Batman wrong. Movie could it be? And you're right, of course, because The Dark Knight had there was a
bank robber,
some bank stuff going on.
Yeah, but I don't remember who said what. Good robbers of banks don't announce. You know what I mean? Like in The Dark Knight, for that scene, it would happen all very quickly and quietly and stealthily because they're pros. All right, we're ready to recover. We're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
So I wanted to talk about a crayon color that came out in 2017 with, I think, my favorite punny color name, and that is Blutiful.
Beautiful. Okay.
Beautiful, yep. But blue.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a solid pun. I saw on the internet other people are less impressed, but I like puns. So I was like, yes, Crayola, you nailed it. Anyway, it's based on a new blue color. It was discovered in 2009.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's the first new blue pigment that was found in 200 years called Yinmen, which is yttrium. I think I'm pronouncing, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yttrium, indium, and manganese oxides mixed together and made this blue.
I love it.
Nobody had known before. And then Crayola made the blue color called Blutiful based on that. Crayola has kind of a history, though, of having like a ton of crayons, and some of the names are not punny at all. In fact, you maybe have no idea what color it is based on the name. For instance, like the classic one that I was like, what is cornflower?
Blue.
Which is blue.
Right.
But when you're a kid, you're like, corn is yellow. Why is this crayon blue?
I definitely, as a kid, was confused by cornflower for sure.
But yeah, so this quiz, though, is called What Color Is This? So I'll tell you a Crayola color. It's not punny. You just kind of have to guess or know already what color this is going to be. All right. So buzz in. I'll keep score. And you tell me what color this is. First one. Wisteria. What color is wisteria?
Oh, man.
Karen.
Purple.
Yes.
Yeah!
Okay. It is. It's like a kind of a lighter, mid-light purple.
I'm already sweating.
I know.
If we just knew our flowers better, maybe.
How about this one? Timberwolf. What color is Timberwolf? I think Chris maybe buzzed first.
Is that gray?
It is gray. Yeah. It's lightish gray.
Right. Yeah.
Could have been brown.
Could have been brown. Timber.
Well, see, yeah. I took a sports angle on that one. Yeah, that's right. The Minnesota Timberwolves, the NBA team. Their wolf, indeed, in their logos and such, is a gray wolf. Yeah.
How about bittersweet?
Bittersweet.
Bittersweet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Karen. Brown.
It's no.
Like chocolate. Mm, oh.
Yeah, like chocolate would make sense.
Oh, how about this,
Chris?
Is it green?
No.
Why did you think it was green?
Because I thought maybe it was like the name of a minty type of plant. You know what I mean?
Spearmint. Yeah. Oh, good guess.
It's red. It's like an orangey red. It's not
weird.
Brown.
Weird.
Huh. Yeah. How about orchid? What color is orchid?
Oh, man.
I mean,
is it like a white-ish color?
No.
No.
Pink.
Yeah, I would guess pink.
Not quite pink.
Pink purple.
Okay, so its original name was medium red violet.
Oh.
So it's like a reddish purple. It's not really pink.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. How about inchworm? What color is inchworm?
Get out of that.
Colin. I'll guess green.
Yes, it's green.
Yeah, a little green inchworm.
Oh, sure, like a little, like a...
In my children's book universe vision. Yep. Yeah,
sure.
Right.
Yep.
Yes. How about Fuzzy Wuzzy?
Fuzzy Wuzzy?
Chris.
Brown.
It's brown.
Yeah.
It used to be called Fuzzy Wuzzy Brown.
Right.
But like Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
Was a bear.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about Thistle?
Oh.
What color?
Oh. It could be two.
I think Karen.
It could be the flower, which is pink, or the plant, which is green. Flower purple.
Yes.
Yeah.
It used to be light magenta, but it's like the lightest purple. Yeah.
What? I wonder. I don't really recall any of these colors in my childhood Crayola super pack.
Some of these are new, and some of these are from like the deluxe one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this one is actually a scented color, but I thought it was so random. So I really can't.
Oh.
Okay, what about shampoo? What color is the crayon shampoo?
Huh.
Wow, that's weird.
Colin.
Blue.
No. Chris.
Yellow.
No. Karen.
Orange.
No.
What is it?
It is carnation pink.
What?
And then I was like, maybe I've seen pink shampoo bottles.
Like Mr. Bubbles, maybe?
Yeah. It's kind of a good shorthand, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, it's better than antacid.
Oh, like Pepto-Bismol. Mm-hmm. That's the Pepto-Bismol crayon. Yeah. Anyway, that's it. That's the quiz. I just thought it was fun to like think about why we name things.
I'm so intrigued by Blutiful. I want to go get one. I know. And look at one in person.
The idea of a new color seems so strange because I feel like at our disposal we can like mix and match whatever color nowadays, but like having a new color.
I feel
is
like
kind of weird.
Dana is our new color beat. I mean, Vanta Black, I learned from Dana. Blutiful, the new blue, like new blue dropped. Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah. All right, everybody, it is all quiz number 44, and it's my turn. Big celebration in my household this week because it's the 15-year anniversary or adoptiversary of my beloved dog, Cisco. Cisco, yeah.
Aww.
15 years adoptiversary.
Wow.
He's almost 16 because I got him as a puppy. He went from a puppy to now a very extremely old man dog who still likes to get himself into trouble once in a while. Probably more so because like he's so old that he just like doesn't care anymore. He's like, I don't have to listen to you. Also, I can't listen to you because I'm deaf.
This happens with people too.
Yeah. I want to celebrate his adoptiversary and with my quiz, and my quiz is called Lala Pupalooza. It is a two-part quiz celebrating dogs and dog breeds. I am the designated dog breed person at our pup trivia team.
Oh, hands down.
We're going to do part one first. So I have a list of very famous dog characters, and I need you to buzz in with your barner buzzer with their correct dog breed.
Okay. All right.
What the character's dog breed supposedly is.
okay. They're in universe.
Yes. Sometimes the dog doesn't look like the breed. For example, if I said Snoopy, you'd buzz in with
Beagle.
Right. Even though he doesn't really look like a beagle.
Okay.
But he's supposed to be a beagle.
Good example.
That was the only one that I was going to get right.
No, they're a lot. Okay. Well, we'll start up easy. All right. So buzz in with your answer. Lassie. Dana.
A collie.
Correct. Collie. Doug from Pixar's Up.
Oh my goodness.
That was Dana again.
A golden retriever.
Correct. Also,
yeah, good guess. Okay. All right.
Earbud really is a golden retriever. Yeah. Pongo and Perdita. Chris.
Dalmatians.
They're the parents in 101 Dalmatians. They didn't have 101 Dalmatian babies.
Have we talked about this on the show before?
About your lawsuit against the Disney Corporation?
I spent a lot on legal fees and it went over. You know how like there's so many movies that just sort of they're there in the sort of the cultural zeitgeist, but you haven't really seen the movie. Like, it's like I knew all about it. It's like 101 Dalmatians and the dogs and then the Cruella de Vil and she wants the dogs. But I had never seen the movie for a really long time until I saw the movie as an adult. I thought that the mom Dalmatian dog had given birth to 101 Dalmatians. I thought that she was suddenly there's 101 little Dalmatian puppies that they had, and Cruella decided to steal all of them. As it turns out, no, it's not about this incredible, like this
fertile,
the most pregnant dog
thing
in the world. Right. It's about, they end up with 101 because they get theirs back, plus all the other ones
that have been
back,
captured.
That's where they have 101 Dalmatians. But I, for a long time, was under the assumption that it was just she was just full of
babies.
Oh, I guess not. Well, I guess if technically it's not that much because if Pongo and Perdita count
99.
As two,
yeah. Exactly.
It's
just
only
99.
Pregnant with 99 Dalmatians. Okay. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Chris, we're in the same boat because I was like, all right,
there
must have been 101 dogs, surely, for this title to make sense. I thought I still haven't seen that movie either. But.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Moving on. Beethoven.
Oh.
Charles Grodin. That is Colin.
He was a big Saint Bernard, yeah?
He's a Saint Bernard, correct.
That's the name of that dog.
All right. Next one. Childhood favorite, Wishbone. Wishbone the dog. Jump from story to story. That was Dana.
Yeah.
Was he a Jack Russell Terrier?
Correct! He's a Jack Russell Terrier. Also, the dog Milo from The Mask with Jim Carrey. That was also a Jack Russell Terrier. All right. Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo.
Oh, does he have a, he has a breed?
A collie.
Yeah, isn't he a Great Dane?
He is a Great Dane. Yeah. So is Marmaduke, Astro from The Jetsons also. Maybe why in that era there are a lot of Great Danes.
Great Danes.
I don't know. Maybe because like they're the same, kind of almost the same height as people.
They're just comically large. Yeah. Yeah.
Santa's Little Helper from The Simpsons. Chris.
Greyhound.
Yes, he's a greyhound.
Yeah. Okay.
Because he was an ex-racing dog.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Toto from Wizard of Oz. Chris.
Toto is... Oh, jeez. What the heck is the name of that dog? I forget.
Okay.
It's a little with the thing with the whatever, but I forget the breed.
Colin.
Is Toto a Scotty, a little Scottish terrier?
No, he is a terrier. Mm. He's a... I'm not sure if I can pronounce this right. Is it... Cairn.
Okay.
No, would not have gotten that.
Cane Terrier.
Ooh.
Okay, all right. Frank from Men in Black.
What?
Dana.
Is he a pug?
He is a pug. He's the little boisterous, loud talking dog alien. Lady from Lady and the Tramp.
Is she Dana? A spaniel? A King Charles Spaniel?
Close.
Oh, Cocker Spaniel.
Cocker Spaniel. Cocker Spaniel.
Okay.
King Charles Spaniel, Cavalier Spaniel is Charlotte's dog from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
Last one here for part one. We've gotten this at Pub Trivia. Either it was read to us or it was like a picture round where they show a picture of this dog.
Oh, no. Oh.
Okay. The Odelay mop dog from Beck's album, Odelay. That was Colin.
I know this one. It is a Commodore.
Yes!
I know it only as the mop-looking dog from the Odelay album cover.
Good job, everybody. Good job. See, that wasn't that wasn't that bad.
Okay, with our dog. You're right. You're right.
You guys know your dog breeds. Yeah. All right. So here I'm moving on to part two. So my dog, Cisco, he is a Rottweiler mix. And I was like, kind of curious. I was like, what does, Rottweiler mean? Because obviously it's German for something. Turns out the breed is named after the geographical region of Rottweil. So not very exciting.
Okay. Yes.
Probably 95% of the dog breeds are named after a region or a city or a person or mostly an area or a country. And then some dog breeds are named, they have very straightforward names, like straight to the point descriptions of what they do. So, for example, Portuguese water dog. It was like Obama's dog's Portuguese water dog. German shepherd, right? They're shepherding sheep and they're German. pretty self-explanatory. So here I have a quiz about famous dog breeds whose names are descriptions of the breed, but in a foreign language.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay. So I will give you the direct translation of these dog breed names and some clues, and you buzz in with the correct name of the dog breed I'm looking for. All right?
Okay. All right.
So for example, if I said the giant, miniature, and standard breed of this dog literally means snout in German, named for its famous mustache snout, you would say...
Is that Schnauzer?
It's Schnauzer. Schnauzer. Schnauzer is snout in German. All right, here we go. Thanks to the internet, this dog breed exploded in popularity back in 2008 thanks to a Bay Area puppy cam. Its breed name literally means firewood dog, mostly due to their fur color looking like fallen leaves and twigs. That is Chris.
Is that Shiba Inu?
Yes, it is Shiba Inu. Inu is dog. Shiba means like firewood, wood, twigs. Funny story. My friend was visiting the Bay Area, and I was taking him around. And we see in the Bay Area there are a lot of Shiba Inus, and I've noticed that almost all of them have like Asian food names as their dog name. Like there's a boba or a kimchi or a mochi or a sushi. They all have like Asian food names. And so I was like making this joke to my friend who's visiting, and I was like, man, all these Shiba Inus all have like Asian food names. And so we're in line to get coffee, and there's a lady behind us with her Shiba Inu, and my friend decided to like test this theory out. Oh, cute dog. You know, to the lady, what's your dog's name? And the lady's like, oh, my dog's name is Taco.
Oh, no.
Before we could say anything, she then followed up with, Taco is octopus in Japanese.
So close.
Oh, my God. Every Shiba Inu I know, and I know a lot, are all named after food. Japanese food.
Yeah. 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 There's no like Western, you know, there's no like tuna casserole or like stroganoff.
Borscht.
<Yeah. laughs> Borscht.
That's my Shiba Inu, borscht.
That's really cute. Somebody should take that.
Oh, if it's like a reddish, dog. Oh, that's cute.
Just borscht. I like that word.
Borscht. Okay. Sorry. Go back to my quiz. Okay. This dog breed name literally means rather low, and these dogs are excellent ground scent trackers.
Rather low.
Huh. It's in French. They're great at ground tracking, ground sniffing tracking.
Oh,
what dog is low to the ground?
I'm just trying to think of any dog with a French name.
Chris.
Basset Hound.
Correct. It is Basset Hound. Yes.
Oh, like Bob.
All right. Next one. This Asian dog breed's name literally means sand skin, known for its very short hair and extremely wrinkly skin. Colin.
Is it Shar-Pei?
Shar-Pei. Yeah. It is.
Huh.
Shar-Pei. Huh. Shoppy go. Shar-Pei. Sandskin. Next dog. This toy dog, it's a toy dog, literally means butterfly due to their face having like a butterfly-like look because of their big upright ears and like trailing ear fur or ear hair.
Huh.
Dana.
A papillon.
Papillon. Correct.
Yeah.
Papillon.
Oh,
butterfly in French. Huh. Yep. This floofy dog is actually named for the German word for splash or puddle. Dana.
Poodle.
Which is funny because we think of it as like, it's always portrayed as like a French accented cartoon dog, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually German. Yeah. German for splash or puddle. Because they're water dogs.
Oh, is it because a French poodle is a version
is a,
of
is
it?
A breed. Yeah.
And that's the one.
All right. Good job, everybody, for Lollapalooza.
Lollapalooza.
Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
And we got one last quiz segment for this all-quiz bonanza. Colin!
I have a quiz for you all titled, What's That Number? And it is a little bit of a grab bag. And all of the questions and or answers revolve around numbers, numerals in way or another. So I'll give you an example here. I was, as you know, out camping a couple weekends ago. And this was a big trip for me. For the first time, my camping friend and I, we rented a 4x4. and we got to just talking about abbreviations and stuff like that. So you all, of course, know what 4x4 stands for, right, in colloquial usage? No? Anyone want to give
like
an explanation?
It's like an In-N-Out burger with four patties.
Yeah. like an off-road vehicle.
It's four-wheel drive vehicle, right. Got four wheels, and four of them are powered, sort of the simplest way of looking at it. Kind of just a shorthand for describing how many wheels or, you know, really, really precisely how many axle ends does the vehicle have, and then how many of them are powered. Right. Other examples where the numbers kind of become a shorthand for the thing itself is really what interested me. So, you know, like a you know, we talk about a 45 record, right, which, you know, as we all know, is short for the RPM, a 45 RPM record.
Oh, I see. I like that.
45s, okay. Things like that. Yeah. Okay. So let's get warmed up here. So get your brains ready. Get your buzzers ready. We'll start off with one I know we have talked about before. Who's quickest on the draw? The large American conglomerate corporation known as the 3M Corporation. What do the 3Ms stand for in the 3M Corporation? Karen.
Minnesota. Yes. Mining manufacturer.
I'll give that to you. That is absolutely right. Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company. That's right. And they did, in fact, start off way back in the early 1900s as a mining concern and manufacturing concern. Yes, in Minnesota. So the 3M, makers of
tape.
By one count, tape among many other things, more than 60,000 products.
Wow.
What else do they make?
Post-its.
Oh, I mean, they make healthcare, you know, industrial worker safety. They make, post-its among many other things, right? Yeah, household goods, scotch tape. All right, this is another one here. This will be a 1 point for each kind of scenario here. So you might want to get a pen or pencil ready. Right. Yeah, let's write these down, please. The Six Flags Entertainment Corporation.
Oh, God.
Also known as Six Flags Theme Parks. Operates properties all over Canada, Mexico, the United States. The name Six Flags is a reference to the flags of the six nations that historically had dominion over Texas. For 1 point each, please name those six nations, nation states, entities. I'm confident that you guys can get at least three or four here, if not all six. How well do you know your U.S. history might come into play? Whenever you're ready, hoist them up. Hoist them up.
Okay.
Okay.
And
Air Bud. Chris has written Air Bud. Yeah, the micronation of Air Bud. All right. I will. Great. Answers up. I trust you. I will let you score yourselves here. I will read out the answers. The answers are Spain.
Okay.
Got it.
France.
Got it.
Mexico.
Got it.
The Republic of Texas.
Got it.
Yeah.
The Confederate States of America.
Oh, you know, I thought this was okay.
And the United States.
Yes.
All right. How many points y'all got here? Let's self-report.
Five.
Five.
Three.
Okay. All right. Karen and Dana, five. Get your buzzers ready. And I apologize, there may be a little bit of bias on this one, but I think you will all know this one.
About cats?
In 1996, the Nintendo 64 was released, a legendary home console. What does the 64 in Nintendo 64 stand for? Chris?
The number of bits that the processor can handle at any given time.
Yeah, that's right. 64-bit processing. Basically, bigger numbers, bigger data. You can do more stuff with it. You can do more cool 3D-ish stuff with it. Even if many of the games were not necessarily taking 100% full advantage of it. Yeah, it could do more. You could just handle more information. Yeah.
Yep. Do more math. Yeah. More math.
That's right.
More math, more fun.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep. Were there any other 64 systems? No, I don't think so. Not at the time. Or at least none that boasted about it in their name. The great, great, great American product. I have many cans of this in my house, at least three in various places. WD-40. Ooh, WD-40.
Uh-huh. Knew it.
I'll tell you the first part. The WD stands for water displacement. Now I'll give you guys a multiple choice here on this one if you want to. I'll give you multiple. Okay. Everyone gets a chance at a point here. Does the 40 in WD-40, does it stand for the 40th formula that the original inventors came up with? Does it stand for 1940, the year it was brought to market? Or does it stand for the 40-year rust guarantee they had?
What I thought was none of these wow. things.
Ooh.
What I WD-40. Was led to believe was none of these things. Okay, so what was it? It's the year it debuted.
Mm-hmm. Was it the year it debuted, 1940? Was it a 40-year rust guarantee? Or was it the 40th formula that the scientists experimented with?
Okay.
All right, answers up. What do you all think here? Chris says 1940. Wow. Karen says 40th formula they came up with. And Dana says 40-year guarantee. Wow, this is really the multiple choice question writer's dream here. Yeah. The split ticket. It is, in fact, if you believe the company story, it is, in fact, the 40th formula that they came up with for a water-displacing substance.
40-year guarantee sounds a long time. Who's going to dispute it, like, 4 years later and be like, dear company,
is it longer than a lifetime guarantee?
Right, that's true.
It reminds me of Heinz 57. Like, it's a braggy kind of number name.
I like it.
That's what I thought it was. I thought a WD-40 was ketchup. I thought it was 40 uses, like 40 different uses.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, right. Like, these are all the ways you can use it around the house.
40 different places on the human body you can use it.
I shouldn't leave you hanging on the year. It was introduced in 1953, actually, by a company called the Rocket Chemical Company. They were creating like solvents and, you know, degreasers for aerospace manufacturers. And it really was, the goal was water displacement. Keep the water out, get the water out of there so things don't rust. And yeah, so they can stay lubricated. Another American success story. Motel 6. You see them all over if you're doing road trips. What does the 6 in Motel 6 stand for? Get your buzzers out. Karen.
$6 a night, initially.
That is right. Yeah. The Motel 6 chain, they were started in 1962. Their original goal, it wasn't just like, oh, wow, things were cheap back then. I mean, which in some sense they were. The two founders, William Becker and Paul Green, Motel 6 was that they wanted to specifically start a budget, no frills, low cost, hotel, essentially motel. And so $6 in 1962 is a little bit over the equivalent of around $50 today. So that's okay. Dirt cheap. Mm-hmm. Like if you get like a $50, hotel room, that's pretty good. Yeah. And they really were super budget. Like, I mean, coin operated black and white TVs instead of, free color TV you might find at other chains. Yeah. There was no restaurant, which was kind of a big difference for sort of a chain, hotel, motel in those days, like compared to like a Holiday Inn or something, like to not have a restaurant on site. Yeah. Any way they could save money, Motel 6. The entertainment company A24. Originally, A24 Films, before they branched out into TV and other things like that, has become one of the most noteworthy players on the scene in the last 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. The premier, at least prestige name in indie films in America right now. I mean, Moonlight, Hereditary, Lady Bird, Uncut Gems, The Room, on and on and on. A lot of big hits. This is a multiple choice here. What does the A24 in A24 stand for? And I'll give you a choice here. I'll give you multiple guess. I won't make this too hard on you. Does the A24 refer to a historic German cinema house?
Oh.
Does it refer to an Italian motorway? Or does it refer to a French postal code? A24. They are an American company.
Can you say the choices again, real quick?
Yes, I'll give you the choices again. A24, does it stand for a historic German cinema house? Does it stand for an Italian motorway, or is it a reference to a French postal code?
Wow, you're really good at writing fake answers.
Yeah.
They're all so believable.
I have a tough crowd. I have a tough crowd. I know it's got to pass your guys' bar.
Yeah.
I originally assumed that it was a reference to, you know, perhaps 24 frames per second film. No. Okay. All right. Chris says German cinema house. Karen says French postal code. And Dana says German theater house. Oh, unfortunately, none of you got it. It is, in fact, named after the A24 motorway in Italy.
Why?
Yeah. This is kind of a very personal. So A24 was founded in 2012 by some veterans of the film industry, Daniel Katz, David Finkel, and John Hodges. The story goes that Katz was on a trip. He was traveling with some friends. And as he tells it, I always had dreams of starting my own company. I was with a bunch of friends driving into Rome, and I had this moment of clarity. It was on the A24 motorway. And in that moment, I was like, now it's time to go do this. All right. In 1995, an up-and-coming American band had just released their debut album. In addition to attention from the local music scene, they also caught the eye of an Irish band with the same name. And indeed, that Irish band had been recording and performing for a few years, sent this American band a request essentially to please knock it off. You cannot use our name. Now, the band really, it seemed, could not care any less. They ultimately chose a random number to append to their name. What was that number, and or what is this band? 1995.
Okay. They added it to it.
Yeah, they added it to their name. Yeah. Dana!
Blink 186. Or Blink 185.
I'm sorry, Dana. I cannot give that to you. I'm sorry. That
is... Blink 187. No, what is their
name? Still incorrect.
Oh my God.
182.
Blink 182. Not 185, not 186, not 187. Yeah. You know,
I'm becoming my dad. He does
too. Yeah. I had always assumed there was some, I mean, even if it was stupid or dumb or local or all three of those, some meaning to the 182 and Blink 182. But no, they say like it really was, they were called Blink originally, and they got a letter from an Irish, you know, pop rock band named also named Blink. The band kept putting off the decision, kept putting it off. Their record label ultimately said to them, guys, if you do not choose a new name, we're going to rename you. And so they just chose a random number and became Blink 182 at that point. Okay, last question for you guys here. All right, beginning in 1982 and continuing for decades, this phone number is widely accepted as the most prank called phone number in American history. What is this phone number? Oh, everybody, at least in my hearing, go for it.
867-5309.
It is 867-5309. Okay. Yes. Whoa. Yeah. This is the name of the song, 867-5309/Jenny by Tommy Tutone. At its height in 1982s, if you were unfortunate enough to have this number, you might be receiving as many as 5,000 phone calls a day.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no.
And that's
in many, many, many areas, people were calling to have their phone number disconnected because it was just it was virtually unusable if you have this, you know, thousands, 5,000 calls a day. As late into the 2000s, even, people who had this number were trying to sell it, you know, places on eBay, things like that. Yeah. It's really interesting. I learned eBay would shut these auctions down because you are not technically allowed to sell a phone number, per se. Like, you cannot just sell a phone number. It's considered sort of a quasi-public resource. Now, if the phone number is part of a business, you know, you could sell the business, right? I mean, like if you're, you know, 1-800, you know, whatever, 1-800 laptops, you know, you could sell that number as part of your business. But you, as an individual, you cannot just post your number. So some people have kind of, indeed, some businesses who have owned this number in various area codes. The 800 and the 888 version of this number have changed hands several times over the years for thousands of dollars.
Wow.
It's still to this day, I read a story by somebody who bought this in the early 2000s, plugged in the you know, the phone. The minute you plug this line in, it just starts ringing. It's just that it just starts ringing. As late as 2013, there is a woman in Florida with this number. I will not give out her area code, but she still says that she would get 50 calls a day as late as 2013 to 867-5309. Yeah, Jenny. Yeah, many people named Jenny over the years hate this song. Anybody with this phone number hates this song. That was What's That Number? And I think you guys did great as usual. And hopefully you learned a little something along the way.
I always appreciate your quiz title, pal. It's always
thank
something
you.
Like,
thank you.
Hey, who's Poop That Number?
My favorite was, I think for our underwater episode, Colin had a quiz called The C Word.
Oh, yes.
S-E-A. Yep.
I don't remember that. That's good. That's good. I don't remember that.
Well, folks, not to bring the energy down here or anything like that, but I have to remind you all of these tragic events of last week's podcast, in which our on again, off again nemesis, Carmen San Mateo, international, now quite frankly, interstellar thief of trivia related items, absconded with what was to be our final prize for winning the trivia based escape room. We found nothing in there but an 8-track tape again, explaining to us she had handed off the prize to one of her associates in crime, Dee Dee Convict, who took the prize and then left us clues, which we solved on the show to find out that where she had taken the prize was outer space. Fortunately, we did remember from the last escapade in which we had to go chasing after Carmen San Mateo, we were still in possession of the fancy and ridiculous time interloper system, aka the FARTIS.
Yeah, our FARTIS.
How can I forget the FARTIS?
Yes. It's our orange phone booth.
Smellier on the inside than it seems like it would be on the outside.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, we have been able to upgrade the FARTIS with the space blast off device, which we're going to attach the SBD. We'll attach the SBD to the FARTIS and finally be able to get into outer space. So let's just press a few buttons here. Beep boop. Magically, we are now in the vastness.
The majesty.
It's just big. There's just a lot of outer space. And I really wish that we had something telling us, like, where
we should look
in
for
the
it.
Universe we should look. We look around the FARTIS and we find a nice control panel that has two things on it, essentially, right now. There's a button that says go to space. We had already pressed that to go to space.
Okay.
And then there is a knob for our interstellar sort of communication radio system. So we turn that and kind of flip through the channels a little bit to see if there's any, you know, communications coming in from outer space. We do actually end up picking something up, and that is this.
Eleven. 12, 5, 15, 18, 9, 15, 14, 19, 2, 21, 3.
Ooh. It's a puzzle.
One of those crazy stations that just has somebody speaking out a bunch of numbers. Yeah, number it does seem station. Like a puzzle. So here's the thing. We listen to it, and it turns out that it loops from there. Like after that last number, it just keeps looping that series of numbers. And in fact, it keeps looping to the extent that we're not actually sure where it begins and when we're, because we just sort of came in. We were able to tune it in.
Okay.
So listeners, everybody out there, Lobetrotters, can you use that loop of numbers to figure out where we're supposed to go in the vastness of space? You should go to goodjobbrain.com. You should look for the FARTIS, and maybe you should type in, I don't know, some sort of a destination for us.
See if you
can get it right. We'll just chill out here in outer space until you guys have an answer, I guess, for us. It's fine. We have Tang. We got
getting
the
everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. They say Tang is for outer space, but you can't just bring a canister of Tang and just open it right up. It's not like it's anti-gravity or anything. I feel like they should put that as a warning on the
box.
It's
an orange cloud we can't see.
Please help us.
It's
please
in
help
my
us.
Ears.
We're gonna. Looks like it's going to take us about a week to clean up the Tang.
That's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned stuff about dogs, about numbers, about colors. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps. And on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like The Sit Down, a Mafia History Podcast, The Projection Booth Podcast, and The Accidental Creative. And we'll see, hopefully see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.